U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder announced today that he's resigning from his post. He says he'll stay until his replacement has been confirmed, which could take a while, maybe through the end of the year.
Holder is the fourth longest-serving attorney general in the country's history and the first African-American to hold that position. He's been outspoken on racial issues, eliminating sentences for nonviolent drug crimes, and his refusal to defend the country's Defense of Marriage Act. His relationship with the GOP-controlled House has been tumultuous throughout his time in office.
Here with us now to discuss his legacy and what it will take to replace him is Carl Tobias. He's Williams Professor of Law at the University of Richmond School of Law. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So why now? Do we know why Eric Holder is stepping down now?
We don't. I don't think he said very much at the press conference about his reasons, but 6 years is a long time. He served right from the beginning of the administration and has long been a public servant in many capacities. And he certainly has taken a lot of criticism, as you mentioned earlier. So there are a number of reasons why he might want to return to the private sector.
And how does this impact the Obama administration, especially when it comes to Justice Department priorities?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the Attorney General is the face of the Justice Department, but the day-to-day operations are undertaken by the Deputy Attorney General and the Associate Attorneys General. But Eric Holder really did use that bully pulpit in lots of ways, and so he will be missed on some of the issues you've already talked about. And one that I see he played a prominent role in was settling the big bank fraud and mortgage fraud cases, where he really drove a hard bargain to settle those possible criminal cases. And so you definitely would lose that. And you lose some continuity, of course, when you have new people. But you expect that as an administration draws to its close.
Well, following up on that bank issue, a lot of the things we'll talk about, I think, involve criticism from Republicans from the right. I've seen some comments already since this morning saying, hey, he didn't do enough. The settlements, sure, but he should have been prosecuting leaders of banks related to the 2008 collapse and ensuing recession. Is that going to be a verdict a lot of people agree on, that he wasn't aggressive enough?
Perhaps. I think many believe that more individuals at the top should have been prosecuted personally, and I don't think we have seen much of that. But still, he did secure like $17 billion settlement from J.P. Morgan and I think $13 billion from Bank of America.
Now, one issue that a lot of people are talking about and that the Attorney General himself has talked about over the years is issues related to race when it comes to crime and punishment. Has Eric Holder been out front speaking explicitly about race where the president hasn't always been willing to venture?
I think that's clear. I mean, that may be his foremost legacy. It's a critically important issue, and he has raised that issue on many occasions in many fora and in many programs at the Justice Department. And while it's a difficult issue to discuss, I think he's been very candid and frank and clear that we need to address that issue and people need to talk about it. And Ferguson is a great, very recent example of the work he's done.
Do you think in the aftermath of Ferguson, he's really moved the needle on the conversation about police and race in this country?
That's a hard question to answer, probably to some extent. But I think it's what he's done over the longer term throughout his career, but especially during the Obama administration as Attorney General.
And bookended, we've got Ferguson at the end, and he got some controversy early on back in 2009 when he called the U.S. a nation of cowards when it comes to talking about racial tensions. Is that something that got him off on the wrong foot with some, maybe some in Congress?
It could be. It's probably true, though, so maybe he shouldn't have said it, but I think he's probably right, and I think he's done what he can to rectify or ameliorate that situation. And try to keep discussion and lines of communication open.
Now, I mentioned a conflict with the Republican-led House since the Republicans took it over back in 2010. The fast and furious gun trafficking law enforcement effort was a big one. And in fact, I just moments ago saw that the contempt issue will still be alive even after he announced his resignation. Was that fast and furious issue really a stain on his performance as an attorney general, or is that something that the Republicans in the House have made more of than was really there?
Well, I guess I think the latter view, but I think people can differ about that, how much responsibility he really had for that. And the contempt citation, I think, really comes out of his effort to protect the prerogatives of the executive branch in that particular fight. And we've seen that from both Democrats and Republicans, depending on who's occupying the White House. So I think on balance, I think stain is too strong, but it certainly wasn't the high point of the his tenure.
And is it uncommon to see that contentious a relationship between an attorney general and a party in Congress?
Unfortunately, I have to say it's becoming increasingly common, and part of the partisanship that so many people associate with what's happening in the Congress and especially in the Senate, not only in the House, but now that apparently is part of the Senate culture as well, which is unfortunate.
Now, we've got, we'll need a new attorney general. The president will be having to deal with either a non-filibuster-proof majority in the Senate this year or a possible Republican majority in the Senate next year. Is this going to be, do you think, a trophy that Republicans in the Senate are looking for to possibly derail the next attorney general nominee?
Well, I hope not. And I think it may depend on what happens in the midterm elections and whether who has a majority in the 114th Congress, how this goes. Or it could depend on the type of person the president nominates. He may try to find someone who's a consensus builder who would not give the Republicans heartburn or cause them any controversy, and then it might go smoothly. But I think we'll just have to see. I think the Republicans are sensitive to the fact that that person needs to be there as soon as is reasonable. But the president can't even nominate anyone until the Senate returns on November 12th. So we'll just have to see.
We're talking to Carl Tobias. He's Williams Professor of Law at the University of Richmond School of Law, talking about U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder's resignation announced earlier today.
And we'd like to hear from you on this at 800-642-1234. What do you think Holder's legacy is? What do you make of the job he's done? Are there things that you thought were highlights or maybe lowlights? What would you like to see in the next U.S. Attorney General? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Times Facebook page. We're back with Carl Tobias Williams, a Williams Professor of Law at the University of Richmond School of Law, talking about U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder's resignation.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the news that Holder is leaving? What do you think, looking back on the job he's done? What would you like to see in the next U.S. Attorney General? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Carl, another big issue, obviously, for the Justice Department over the last 6 years, the war on terrorism. There has been criticism over violations of privacy, concerns over cyber snooping on U.S. citizens, people abroad. How do you assess Eric Holder and his Justice Department when it comes to those issues?
Well, there are a lot of different issues involved, and the obvious tension is between security and liberty or privacy. And I think it does seem that there may have been some overreach with NSA and other situations, and people have certainly criticized the Justice Department, and I believe Holder did authorize some of those activities. On the other hand, I think he pressed fairly hard for trying terrorists in civilian courts rather than in military courts, and lost that battle to some extent, though the Justice Department has had considerable success in prosecuting terrorists in civilian courts. So I think it's a mixed record on that front.
And these are issues that the Bush administration was criticized for. The Obama administration, while speaking a different language in some cases, carried on similar policies. Are we going to resolve these issues, that balance you mentioned between rights to privacy and security in the next attorney general, in the next administration, whoever that might be?
Well, hopefully. But I suppose that the place where that really should happen is with our elected representatives in the House and the Senate, hopefully, and that they can work that proper balance. But it's a very difficult issue, I think, and one that's not easily solved.
Do you think that the Congress has done enough to pursue that conversation and to try to set the framework for the executive branch to work under?
Well, that's a good question. There may not be enough guidance. There may not be enough consensus in Congress to really give the executive much guidance. And the executive, no matter what the administration is, knows that national security is critical and that everyone looks to the president for that leadership. And so it's difficult, I think. But I would hope that Congress would play a larger role perhaps in the future, and there are some signs that it might.
So one of the biggest issues that's been in the courts the last handful of years has been over same-sex marriage, and one of the Attorney General's biggest actions is something decided not to do, and that was defending the federal Defense of Marriage Act. Was that an important decision? Did it change the way this issue has progressed through the courts?
Well, certainly the case that the Supreme Court had, which he refused to defend, it turned out to be really the impetus for the wave of litigation that we've seen since. And the Windsor case really has driven the cases like the Wisconsin case and others all around the country. Almost every federal district court and most of, and all the appeals courts so far have basically ruled in favor of marriage equality. And so by deferring there, he may have opened that door to some extent. And certainly he has strongly supported marriage equality.
Yet another issue, and this was one right from the start, voting and civil rights. We talked about some issues of race relations earlier. Early on, there were rumors that the civil rights enforcement branch of the Justice Department was, some described it, in shambles, and he made a priority of fixing that up. And then there was a Supreme Court case on voting rights, especially in southern states, stemming from the 1960s. Can you talk about Eric Holder's role in those issues?
Well, I think he was a very strong advocate of civil rights and tried to push as hard as possible in that area. And you're correct, the Supreme Court recently said that there would not have to be preclearance of voting changes, and that has set up a very different dynamic. He's tried to respond to that in other ways and tried to be creative, but that does change quite a bit and puts the onus on plaintiffs who want to challenge those changes. And so that's really worked a fundamental change, but he certainly fought that and lost at the Supreme Court 5-4.
Now, stepping away from particular issues, how significant is Eric Holder's legacy as the first African-American Attorney General of the United States?
Well, I think it's very important, but I think what's been most important is the way he has spoken out and led and tried to generate conversations and initiatives involving race and especially the criminal justice system. And I think that is a very valuable legacy to have.
Moving forward, what do you think are pieces of unfinished business that Eric Holder leaves behind as he leaves the office whenever his successor takes office, which is still an open question?
Well, obviously the issues I just spoke about are unfinished. They are with us all the time, and I think he has helped to move that conversation along, but that will always be important into the future. A number of the investigations, for example, he was instrumental in the Toyota settlement of the large criminal case. There is a similar investigation of GM ongoing now, and that will have to be wrapped up. But the Southern District of New York, I think, has all of that under control. And so I think those are some of the issues that remain. And I think the criminal justice issues will have to continue to be worked on. For example, which cases ought to be prosecuted and what kind of sentences should be handed down and that type of thing.
We'll leave it there for now. Carl, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Carl Tobias. He's the Williams Professor of Law at the University of Richmond School of Law, talking about U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder's resignation, which he announced earlier today.